All right, so today we're diving into a situation that's really gonna test the limits of where our legal protections end, you know? So imagine this. We've got a US Border Patrol agent standing on US soil, okay, fires their weapon and tragically kills a 15-year-old Mexican national who is on Mexican soil. So the immediate question, at least for me, and I think for a lot of law students out there, is like, does the US Constitution even offer any kind of protection in this kind of scenario? It's a cross-border incident. It's messy. What happens?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is exactly what Hernandez v. United States, a 2014 case out of the Fifth Circuit, grapples with. And it's, I think, a really important case for understanding the extraterritorial reach of constitutional rights. As future lawyers, you're going to run into these kinds of issues, increasingly as our world becomes more globalized. So we're going to really take a deep dive today into the legal arguments and the reasoning behind the court's decision in Hernandez.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting because we're talking about domestic law, right? US law, but applied to this incident that's international, you know? And where does one end and one begin? So, I guess to kind of lay it all out there, what are we hoping to accomplish today?
So I think, the goal of this deep dive is to really dissect the Hernandez case, and look at extraterritoriality, qualified immunity, the Bivens Doctrine, all of these really thorny legal concepts, and try to make sense of them in light of this really tragic border shooting.
Okay, so let's actually take a step back and look at what actually happened on the ground.
So this all takes place in 2010, near El Paso, Texas, near the Paso del Norte Bridge. And you have a 15-year-old boy, Sergio Hernandez, who is on the Mexican side of the border. And importantly, he's not trying to cross the border. He's just playing a game with his friends. And this game involves running up to the border fence, touching it, and then running back down. So they're just kind of messing around.
Got it.
Meanwhile, you have Border Patrol agent Jesus Mesa Jr., who is on the U.S. side of the border. And at some point, Agent Mesa detains one of Sergio's friends. And as Sergio is watching this, he's kind of standing back on the Mexican side of the culvert, and Agent Mesa fires his weapon at least twice. One of those bullets strikes Sergio in the face, and he dies instantly.
Oh my gosh.
So you have this, incredibly tragic situation where you have an action happening on U.S. soil, but causing a death on Mexican soil.
Yeah, it's almost hard to wrap your head around, right? This invisible line and a life was lost because of something that happened to cross that line. I know that there are conflicting accounts of what actually led up to this tragic shooting.
So Agent Mesa claimed that he was acting in self-defense. He said that he was being attacked, that people were throwing rocks at him. But the Hernandez family disputes this. They say that Sergio was unarmed, that he was just a bystander, and that he posed no threat to Agent Mesa.
So that obviously adds a whole other layer of complexity and confusion to the case.
Absolutely. And it makes this jurisdictional question even more complicated. Can the U.S. prosecute one of its agents for an action that happened on U.S. soil but caused a death in Mexico? It's really tricky.
So what happened with the legal case? What was the trajectory of this?
So the case starts in U.S. District Court, right? And the district court dismissed all the claims brought by the Hernandez family, basically saying that Sergio, as a Mexican national with no real ties to the United States, he couldn't claim the protections of the U.S. Constitution.
Oh, so they were basically saying that the Constitution stops at the border.
Yeah, essentially, at least in this situation. But the Hernandez family appealed that decision, and the case went up to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. And there, things got a little more interesting. A three-judge panel initially reversed the district court's
They
decision.
did.
Yeah, at least in part.
Oh, okay.
So they allowed the Fifth Amendment claims to proceed. And their reasoning was that Agent Mesa's actions, firing his weapon, that happened on U.S. soil. And they said that this conduct was potentially so egregious that it shocked the conscience, which is, a very high standard, but they felt that it potentially met that standard.
And like you said, that shocks the conscience standard is not an easy one to meet. It has to be something truly outrageous and egregious.
And one of the judges on that panel, Judge Prado, he even went so far as to say that the United States would essentially be answerable to no one else for the agent's actions in this situation.
Wow. Okay, so it sounds like that panel was really trying to hold the U.S. government accountable.
They were. But, and here's where it gets even more complicated, the Fifth Circuit decided to rehear the case en banc, which means with all the judges on the Fifth Circuit participating.
Oh, okay.
And when they did that, they reversed the panel's decision and dismissed all the claims.
Wow. So they went back to the original district court ruling.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
They really focus on these issues of extraterritoriality, saying that, you know, the Constitution just doesn't extend that far. Yeah. And they also brought up this idea of qualified immunity, which we can get into later. But essentially, it's a way to protect government officials from liability.
Got it.
And then, of course, the case went all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, the Supreme Court. So what did they say?
Well, in the end, the Supreme Court actually agreed with the Fifth Circuit's en banc decision. They upheld the dismissal of the claims against Agent Mesa, and they really emphasized the need to defer to the executive branch and to Congress in matters that involve foreign policy.
Okay, so they're basically saying that the courts shouldn't be interfering in something that's really a diplomatic issue between the U.S. and Mexico.
Exactly. They said that this kind of cross-border incident is better handled through diplomatic channels rather than through the courts.
So let's dig into some of the specifics here, starting with that Fifth Amendment argument. I mean, there was a lot of back and forth about whether the Fifth Amendment even applied in this case.
Right. So the Fifth Amendment, it guarantees due process of law, and it protects against certain government abuses. And the key part here was this idea that Agent Mace's conduct by firing his weapon from U.S. soil could be considered such an egregious abuse of power that it shocked the conscience, even though the death occurred in Mexico.
Right, right.
But the Fifth Circuit, en banc, and ultimately the Supreme Court, they disagreed. They said, look, there's really no clear precedent for applying the Fifth Amendment in this kind of extraterritorial context. And they also said, you know, we have to be really careful about creating these kinds of, you know, international legal entanglements, you know, could have serious foreign policy implications.
Right. Like if we start holding U.S. officials liable for actions that have consequences in other countries, that could create a whole bunch of diplomatic problems.
Exactly.
What about the Fourth Amendment? Did that come up at all?
It did, but the courts were pretty unified on that one. They all agreed that the Fourth Amendment, which protects against unreasonable searches and seizures, doesn't apply to non-citizens outside of U.S. territory. So, since Sergio Hernandez was a Mexican national on Mexican soil, the Fourth Amendment argument didn't really go anywhere.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, you mentioned qualified immunity earlier, and I know that was a big part of the case. Can you break that down for us?
Sure. So, qualified immunity, it's essentially a legal doctrine that shields government officials, like law enforcement officers, from being sued for actions they take in the course of their duties, unless they violate a clearly established right that a reasonable person would have known about.
Okay, so it's kind of like a protection for them when they're doing their job, as long as they're not, like, knowingly breaking the law.
Right. And the idea is that we don't want to chill law enforcement officers from doing their jobs effectively by making them constantly worry about being sued.
Right. That makes sense.
So in the Hernandez case, even if the courts had found that Agent Mesa violated Sergio's constitutional rights, he would likely have been protected by qualified immunity because the law regarding cross-border shootings by U.S. agents, it just wasn't clearly established in 2010 when this incident occurred. There wasn't really any case law out there that would have put a reasonable Border Patrol agent on notice that this kind of shooting would be unlawful.
So it sounds like a big part of the problem is that there's not a lot of legal guidance for agents in these kinds of, you know, really unique and challenging situations at the border.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And it raises the question of, you know, should there be more specific laws or regulations to guide agents in these cross-border situations?
Yeah, that's a good question. Now, there was also this thing called the Bivens Doctrine that came up. Can you explain what that is and why it mattered in this case?
Sure. So the Bivens Doctrine, it basically allows people to sue federal officials for violating their constitutional rights, even if Congress hasn't passed a law specifically authorizing that kind of lawsuit.
Oh, okay. So it kind of creates a pathway for people to seek justice when their rights have been violated by the federal government.
Exactly. But the thing is, the Supreme Court has become really reluctant to expand the Bivens Doctrine to new types of cases.
Mm-hmm.
And in Hernandez, they said, look, we're not going to create a new Bivens remedy for this specific situation because it involves all these sensitive foreign policy and national security issues.
So they're essentially saying it's better to let Congress or the executive branch deal with this rather than creating a new legal avenue through the courts.
Exactly. They want to defer to the other branches of government in this kind of, politically charged area.
It sounds like there was a lot of disagreement among the judges who heard this case, especially at the Fifth Circuit level. Can you talk about some of the different opinions that were expressed?
Yeah, definitely. So remember that initial three-judge panel at the Fifth Circuit that allowed the Fifth Amendment claim to move forward? Well, the judge who wrote the majority opinion for that panel, Judge Prado, he argued that there were no special factors that should prevent the creation of a Bivens remedy in this situation. He basically said that the U.S. has a unique responsibility to hold its own agents accountable for their actions, especially when those actions have consequences in other countries.
Okay, so he was really focused on accountability for the U.S. government.
Right. But another judge on that panel, Judge Dennis, he agreed that the Fifth Amendment claim should proceed, but he was more cautious about extending the Fourth Amendment extraterritorially. He was worried about the potential for that to create even more legal complexity and international tension.
Okay, so he was kind of trying to draw a line, saying, let's focus on the Fifth Amendment here, but let's not go too far.
Exactly. And then you had Judge DeMoss, who actually dissented from the panel's decision. He said, look, I think we're overstepping our bounds here. We can't just expand the reach of the Fifth Amendment into foreign territory like this.
Okay, so he was really concerned about judicial overreach.
Right. He was worried about the court interfering too much in matters that are really the domain of the executive branch or Congress.
So it sounds like we have a lot of different perspectives here on how to balance individual rights with national security and foreign policy concerns.
Absolutely. And I think this case really highlights how complex and challenging those issues can be, especially when we're dealing with situations that cross borders.
So I'm wondering, for those of us who aren't legal scholars, is there a way to kind of simplify these different legal tests and standards that come up when we're talking about extraterritoriality?
Yeah, I think so. So when courts are considering whether U.S. law applies outside the U.S., they look at a few key factors. First, they look at the citizenship or immigration status of the person who is claiming that their rights were violated. Second, they look at the location where the alleged violation actually occurred. And third, they consider whether there are any practical obstacles to applying U.S. law in that situation, like potential conflicts with foreign governments or interference with diplomatic relations.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's not just about where the person is from. It's also about where the incident happened and whether applying U.S. law would cause problems with other countries.
Right. And in the Hernandez case, you can see how all of these factors played a role in the court's decision.
Right. Especially that concern about diplomatic relations with Mexico.
Exactly. And then when we're talking about qualified immunity, remember that the key question is whether the right that was allegedly violated was clearly established at the time of the incident. So the courts are essentially asking, would a reasonable official in that situation have known that their actions were unlawful? And to answer that question, they look at existing laws, court decisions, and other legal precedents.
Okay, so it's about whether there was clear legal guidance available to the official at the time they acted.
Right. And if there wasn't, then they're more likely to be protected by qualified immunity.
So with all of that in mind, what are the biggest takeaways from the Hernandez case for aspiring lawyers?
Well, I think there are a few key things to remember. First, U.S. courts are generally reluctant to extend constitutional rights to non-citizens outside of the United States, especially when doing so could interfere with foreign policy or national security.
Right. It seems like those concerns about foreign relations often carry a lot of weight.
They do. Second, the Bivens Doctrine, which allows people to sue federal officials for constitutional violations, has become very limited in its scope, and courts are hesitant to apply it in new situations, particularly when sensitive foreign policy issues are involved.
Okay, so don't assume that Bivens will be available in every case.
Right. And third, qualified immunity provides significant protection for government officials as long as they can show that their actions didn't violate a clearly established right.
Yeah.
So as a lawyer, you need to be aware of this doctrine and how it might affect your cases.
So it's really important to understand these nuances and complexities when dealing with legal issues that involve the government, especially in cross-border situations.
Absolutely.
Wow, this has been a really fascinating deep dive, but it's definitely a heavy one. It really highlights this tension between trying to seek justice for a tragic incident and respecting the complexities of international relations.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And it really underscores the limitations of the law when we're dealing with situations that don't fit neatly into our domestic legal framework.
It makes you think about how the law has to adapt to our increasingly interconnected world. And it leaves me with a question for our listeners. What do you think is the right way to balance the need for accountability with the need to maintain good relations with other countries, especially when incidents like this happen at the border?
Yeah, it's a really tough question.
Yeah.
And there's no easy answer. But it's one that all of us as future lawyers and as citizens need to grapple with.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. We hope this has been informative and thought-provoking, and we encourage you to keep exploring these issues. Until next time.